Our next speaker is Sasha Karakasuvic. Have I got that right, Sasha? I was practicing this morning. And Sasha's from the NHS Horizons team, who do a lot of work with culture change, sharing lessons across the country, and supporting us in our innovation and improvement journey. So Sasha's worked in the NHS. He's worked on large-scale change programmes that he's going to talk about today. And he's also been a visiting fellow at the Nuffield Trust. So while Sasha's coming up to the stage, if you haven't got onto Slido, I think a few people have not found the link. It's hashtag innovation show, and that's the link for the questions. So keep the questions coming, and we can ask Sasha after the presentation.
Thank you, Liz. Well, good morning, everybody. It's a real pleasure to be here today. My family origins, I've got a good Derbyshire name, but my family origins, actually my parents met in Southport, so it's lovely to be in the Southwest. I've been involved, I realise, in large-scale change and thinking about complexity now for about 30 years, and Liz has given me the opportunity to share some perspectives of that story this morning. And I'm going to start off with this. I actually trained to be a dentist, and I practiced for about 20 years, but realised quite early in my training that actually the system was a lot sicker than most of the people I was looking after, and I got intrigued in systems. And this is a developing tooth germ, and I think you can see that it's a thing of some beauty. it works with no chief tooth germ cell in there. It works with no particular control systems, yet reproducibly it produces a model. And this model works with time and space relationships. So although there is some flexibility in there, actually it's pretty reproducible. But what happens when the environment changes? I think you can see that when the environment has changed, in this case experimentally, it starts to fall to pieces. And the challenge we have, and what I've seen spending 20-odd years in South Devon delivering large-scale changes, for 20-odd years, our model was convergent. Everything made sense. The next thing to do made sense. And then suddenly, in about 2006, things started to diverge. The model no longer made sense. And this is what is behind the question. To integrate, is that actually the question? Well, how can I answer that and help you answer it? Well, the first thing I did was to try and work out how do the pieces fit together. I put to you this sort of very simple model on the basis that all models are wrong, but some of them are useful. And what happens when you think through our core purpose? What are we here for doing? Well, it seems to me that that's all about health, population health, progressing social equity. And so I always start with activity. But what does that do for the workforce? What does it do for the money? And what does it do for trust? Well, in the interests of time, we could do a poll on this, but if you assume that over the next decade, activity might need to increase by about 20%, in the Northwest, that seems to generate about 32,000 additional jobs. Do you see any problems with that? Probably. And when I looked at the Northwest data for the last 10 years, you've pretty much stabilised at 160,000 people working for the NHS. And if you didn't done this slide 10 years ago, probably the activity would have said it was going to go up 20%, yet the number of people you have working for you is still 32,000. If you think about that in terms of marginal changes in workforce, you'll find that that is probably somewhere between 25 and 30% of the additional working population of your region. Probably it's not going to play out that way. And if you think through, you're spending 10 billion plus or minus, so 20% on that, another 2 billion. Any problems there? Well, maybe one or two. And What about trust? How do you actually operate? Without trust, actually, it's really, really difficult to make progress. And so as an innovator and as a system leader, how do you start to bring these things into balance? The biggest danger is looking in the rearview mirror. What's got us here is not going to deal with what is coming towards us. And I think one of the best questions I was ever posed with as a young leader was, what are we here for doing? If we're here for meeting the needs of our community, how do we work with our communities to deliver the healthcare they want with the resources that we have available? What kind of innovation do we need to achieve that? And is it about integration, making things more structurally connected, or is it about innovation, creating more flexibility, more rapid learning? If you don't know the answer to that question, when you come to turning left or right, you just might go in the wrong direction. And what we're seeing when you stand back from this problem is transformation and change. This is a slide from Bill Sharp, the patterning of hope. And he proposes that the first horizon is our current view of the world. And over time, the current view of the world will diminish. And yet, always, there are signs of the future here. You sometimes have to look quite hard for them, but some things that are already happening now are the future, and you could think about genomic technology, you could think about some of the different models that Liz popped up on the screen, you can think about some of the social trends that are happening. If those are starting to emerge, there is an issue of transformation. And what Bill goes on to say is that roughly every quarter of a millennia or so, so many parts of the current model become unstable at the same time that actually a big change happens. Think in terms of the Industrial Revolution. Nobody woke up one day to find factories, cities. It happened over a period of time. And actually, the literature says these sorts of transitions happen over a 25 to 50 year period. And so my proposition is that probably we are not at the beginning of the end. We might be getting close to the end of the beginning. And so what's going to come next? Well, this sort of uncertainty generates a big shift in trust. And this data is from Edelman, who publish annually something called the Trust Barometer. And over to the left-hand side, you can see the figures for 2017, significant reductions in trust in governments, boards of directors, chief execs, even NGOs, and actually most trust remaining with people like us, technical experts, people we have a relationship with, small groups of people trying to get things done. What does this do in terms of how we lead, what we need to do differently? The good news, by the way, is the 2018 data is no worse. The bad news is it isn't much better. And so we come to integration. And I put this up because sometimes there's a little bit of magical thinking. Oh, we'll do some integration and it'll all be much better. Or it's integrated or it's not integrated. Integration is hard work, and it means bringing people together in ways that are useful. It does not mean, in my view, building very large, very rigid structures which are harder to change. So how do we build a culture of integration? How do we make it active? Here are some thoughts. Hopefully some of you will recognise this. One of the joys of living in Devon is the easiest way to get to Liverpool is to fly to Manchester, and occasionally, just before you make the final turn for the approach, it's a clear morning. So there's Liverpool for you. And what's really interesting for me, thinking about these sort of large-scale changes, is that actually the UK in health terms, if you believe most of the data, is amongst the leading pack. You know, the Commonwealth Fund would have us number one most of the time. The OECD would be a bit more negative, but we're amongst the leading pack. And the problem is nobody knows what to do next at a national level, which makes it very difficult for those of us working in national level. What would the minister stand up and say, this is what we're going to do next? Any answers, let Sam know, and she can take them down on the train to London in a minute. But the point is, actually, we don't know how to break through the current boundaries of performance at a national level. And so what we're seeing, and what I've seen travelling around the world, is a shift towards city regions leading the way. And actually, you know, this is one of the most dynamic cities in the country. Lots and lots of change has started here. Lots of change will continue to grow here. And it doesn't happen all in one place. There are lots of conversations, lots of networks fueling each other, feeding off each other. And as a region, you've learned to be highly successful in terms of getting funding from elsewhere by being collective. Now, you might not always feel collective in the room, but outside, you represent yourselves extremely well as a collective. And I tried to get the Dallas funding in the Southwest, and you got it. because you were collective, because you had ways of working together. So there's something about city regions are really important. And anybody recognise this city region? It's Shanghai. I've always wanted to go to Shanghai. I managed to go there last year. And they have a museum of their building products and development and unbelievable pace of growth. There are 30 ships an hour going up the river full of construction product. This is probably one of the richest cities in the world. And what's interesting is the bit in the middle of that picture towards the top wasn't there a decade ago. And so where city regions want to do things and adapt quickly, they can. And going back to the trust point here, Edelman says China actually has one of the most trusted governments in the world. Now, who sitting in this room would have thought that a decade ago? So there's something about collective action, there's something about developing at scale where you can get the resources for change, but you can maintain sufficient flexibility, and there's something about clarity of vision. Big design, big vision. It's very easy to get sucked into the next best small invention. But actually, if it isn't meeting your goals, if it isn't attacking this challenge of human productivity, how are we going to make it work? So I just thought I'd put up a few pictures. Brunel. Bit of a hard guy, but actually his drive in terms of engineering created a whole series of possibilities that were only achieved because of his inventions in terms of railways and engineering. Emily Pankhurst completely changed the way we think about democracy, huge impact. And obviously Nelson Mandela needs no introduction, but the process of change that he produced was enormous. And obviously standing here now looking at those in the rearview mirror, it's kind of obvious, but what did it feel like to them at the time they were doing these changes? What does this sort of leadership require at a period of uncertainty where we all want to maintain our values, we want to make progress, but we're not certain what to do next? Well, what's beginning to emerge in the literature are some really interesting themes. Firstly, social movements really matter. Once you're clear about what you want to do, thinking through who the pillars of power are, where your allies are, and how you get people to follow you is really, really important. And actually, if nobody wants to follow you, maybe the idea isn't that good. But as you've seen from the previous slide, persistence matters. Most of those people are representing their lives' work. So if it really matters and it's important and you can get people to follow, think through how you can create a movement. The second point is about the shift in power. And don't see this as an either or, it's a pendulum. So old power, this is work from Jeremy Hyams and Henry Timms, whose book has just recently been published. But old power was about hanging on to power, held by a few, commanded models, very transactional. New power is much more about movement. And how do we trade, how do we share, how do we learn together? And what's interesting is the pendulum. So if you think about people like Barack Obama, when he was trying to become president, he was using very, very new power models. Once you've got to that position, maybe you swing a little bit more into old power ways of thinking. Actually, the balance is what seems to make a difference. And there are a whole series of tools and techniques which are really important to innovation that are worth thinking through. And this is leading to different ways of thinking about improvement. So this comes from Jason Leach and Derek Feely of IHI. The move from keeping power to sharing power to ceding power. And we're having a debate, an active debate, about do people with power really cede power? Well, actually, the answer is probably yes, but in a way which is about balance. So you obviously aren't going to give away power and get nothing in return, but actually if you find a way of engaging more people, maybe you'll end up with more power. This balance between old power and new power, this balance between leading and securing followership, is changing. And the level that it seems to work best at is where you've got some sort of mandate. So the city, region, the local democracy, how you work with your communities seems to be really, really important. And from a Horizons team point of view, we talk a lot about change agents and change agency. So how do you put yourself into the position to be a change agent? How do you put yourself into a position to have change agency? And what this is saying is the change agency is about the power individually and collectively to make a difference. So what kind of conversations are you going to have over coffee when we get there shortly to actually build your mandate to get the changes that you need to see happen? And this model may be helpful. This is the idea from Jeremy and Henry again of ACE. How, instead of producing guidance, do we create something which is actionable, connectable, or connected and extensible? So it's an idea that enables people to bring some of their own energy, enthusiasm, local context to bear. Because increasingly, as we've become more diverse, as we've become more flexible, the one size fits all doesn't work. You have to think through more about how to create a community. I'm going to leave you with just three thoughts. Firstly, design with productivity in mind. Healthcare people are a scarce resource. I don't need to tell you that. But with an aging population, we are not going to have more health people than we need. And indeed, there is already a global inequity. We'd probably be more than the medical workforce of lots of different countries if we were just this room in other parts of the world. So the idea that we're going to just get everybody else's health workers feels to me could be completely wrong. So design with productivity in mind and think through how do we simplify. Excellence is achieved when there is nothing else to remove, not when there is nothing else to add. Second thought is technology on its own is just stuff. Technology enables us to change the business model and it enables us to change the experience. And we need all three if we're going to make sustainable change. And finally, integrate in ways that meet your purpose. Integration is just a tool. It needs to be adapted to the situation. And most of the integration, I would suggest, at this stage is about accelerating learning, enabling co-production, and maximising productivity. I'm going to stop at that point. Just to say, I don't think we've got much time for questions, but that's the Horizons team. We're a fantastically small group of people who are passionate about this sort of stuff. And some of the sources that I found useful on this 30-year journey. Thank you very much.